My mornings are chaos. I need coffee that works as hard as I do. That's why I drink Everyday Dose, coffee with benefits. It's rich, delicious coffee boosted with mushrooms, collagen, and nootropics. Everything I need for focus and balance, ready in 30 seconds. The Black Friday sale is on. Get 61% off your first coffee plus starter kit, a free A2 probiotic creamer, and over $100 in free gifts. Plus, enter for a chance to win $100 cash or get your entire order refunded. Visit everydaydose.com/podcast or use code podcast at checkout.
The Pirates of the Caribbean meets Abercrombie. The very ending of the book left me with a nice hook. They're all pirates. They all lust. They kill. They're horrible. And it's just such a train wreck and fun to watch. He wants to and intends to become the king of the pirates, and he wants to unite all the pirates against the kingdom, essentially.
And to do so, he needs to find the one piece.
Welcome back, everybody, to another Tudor Ramble episode. I'm one of your hosts, Austin.
I'm your other host, Richard.
We are doing, at first, a spoiler-free review for the first 10 to 15 minutes, so we will give you warnings, but for the book, Where Loyalties Lie, by Rob J. Hayes. This won the 2017, which was the third round of the SPFBO Championship. The SPFBO stands for Self-Published Fantasy Blog Off, hosted by Mark Lawrence. Rich and I, we are we are judges amongst nine other judges. We accompany them. And we are ranking all 10 of the winners of the past decade. So this was the third winner. This is now a lot of numbers I'm throwing out, but this is the sixth book that Rich and I have read for the competition. It's a series we've been doing. We have a playlist where you could check how did we rank all the other books, and we'll have four more rankings after this of the other four winners. But we're talking about this book today, Where Loyalties Lie. We're going to pitch the book, review it, say where it ranks, and at the end say, hey, did our feelings change after the conversation? Because guess what, Rich? I like this book a lot. This is a fun book. Spoiler free, did you like the book?
I thought it was fine.
Ah, okay.
Yeah. It has mellowed with time after I finished it, so.
It was just yesterday.
I know.
Yeah.
It cooled quick.
It cooled, yeah.
Yeah.
So this book, just to give some info, then we'll give some more thoughts on this. This is a duology, which I don't see many duologies out there. It's called the Best Laid Plans series. However, this is the first book in the series. However, there is a prequel / I don't know if it was written before or after, but there's a what's called the First Earth Saga, where there's multiple books that are prequels to this book. However, you don't need to read those. You can just jump into this one and it works perfect as a book one. I guess there's things referred to in this book that some people would know from reading the prior books. I did not know any of that. Still had just as much fun. What is the book about? Do you want me to pitch it or you? I think I'm more enthusiastic one today.
You should pitch it this one.
Okay, yeah. So this book is about pirates. It's basically the Pirates of the Caribbean. Do I say that right? Do you say Caribbean or Caribbean?
I mean, the movie, I think, says Caribbean.
I'll go with that.
Whatever.
It's basically the Pirates of the Caribbean meets Abercrombie. It's a grim, dark book where the unique perspective we get is that you don't get character perspectives. You get the perspectives from ships. As in, the ships are the title of each of the chapters. So you don't follow just this character. You follow the people that are on the ship. And it's kind of cool little neat quirk this book does. And we have our four main characters that we do follow. And the pirating that you see in this world, it being grimdark, there are some scenes that there's assault scenes and some violent stuff. So warning for anybody that doesn't like that kind of stuff. It is very much grimdark. And to perfectly visualize this in your head, it really does. Even the prose kind of gets Abercrombie-esque. It's very reminiscent of that tone, that style. So that's what you get to get yourself into and expect. The quick inciting incident in the book is we start off right away with the Black Sands. This island is burning in front of one of our main character Drake's eyes, this pirate Drake. He sees it burning, and he's now he has a plan in mind, which we soon find out is he wants to and intends to become the king of the pirates, and he wants to unite all the pirates against the kingdom, essentially.
And to do so, he needs to find the one piece.
It's Pirates of the Caribbean meets One Piece meets Grimdark. And this one's more pure fun, action-packed. It's not going to be your thought-provoking book, but if you're looking for something to just have some fun and you like that kind of style, I would very much recommend this book. Anything else there? Do you think that's an accurate pitch of the book, or would you put another little spin on it?
There's plenty of people I would recommend this book to. I think this mass appeal, I think most people will like it. Most people that like Abercrombie will probably like this book, is my guess.
What I liked about this in particular, too, was it has really fun characters without sacrificing the plot. That was something special. I know when you read Abercrombie books, so I've read the first three books, it's often complained that the first book especially doesn't have much of a plot. Now, Richard would disagree.
Now, everyone is wrong about that, including Abercrombie himself, by the way. But that's, I digress.
Yes. However, seeing from the first Law series, the complaints being it's really character focused, but not a plot. This has really fun characters and a plot. A fast-paced, interwoven plot with a multiple character point of views that weave together. So that it scratches that itch as well. It doesn't sacrifice characters for a poor plot or just not focusing on plot storyline. So that's another feature of it. This being the third ever SBFBO win, I'll give some of the scores and other thoughts of people who ranked this but in the past. So this was given an 8.1 out of 10 total average of the 10 judges who judged this back in 2017. We had the highest scores were from Lynn's Books and The Quillery and Book Nest. Those three gave it a 9 out of 10. And we had other ones were 8s, 8.5s, and then the lowest, we had one score that was a 4, and that was the ranges for where loyalties lie from other people. Anything that you saw, did you look anything into what others' thoughts were? Just
nope. I read book, and I'm here to give my thoughts on said book.
Fair enough, yeah. Have you heard of anything of this book before reading it? Did you have any preconceived notions?
Have you heard of this book before reading it?
Yes, specifically because when Sword of Kaigan, one of my favorite books ever, when Sword of Kaigan was releasing another special edition, which I already have the prior special edition, it was doing a joint release on Kickstarter with Where Loyalties Lie, where you could buy the Sword of Kaigan book, but also Where Loyalties Lie for a bundle deal. And so I got it. I got the bundle because it looked like a cool cover. I was like, oh, a pirate. Mm-hmm. And so I bought it having never read it.
Oh, well,
and
there you go.
That was my preconceived, like, ooh, cool art.
Gotcha.
That was all I knew. And I don't know if that Kickstarter is still going on. I'll link it, but I'm sure it's probably over. So sorry, I can't really
it's
plug.
It's probably over.
It probably is over.
You can spend an exorbitant amount on eBay or something.
Yeah.
Or DM Austin. Maybe he'll sell it to you.
No. Please no.
For the right price.
Ah, it's all about where does my loyalty lie? The money?
Yeah, the money.
Or the book.
Or the book.
I don't know. So what? Let's see your spoiler-free thoughts. Oh, before we do that, we also have a Patreon book club. If you want to check our link in the description below, where you can join us and talk books every month. And we do community book clubs. Our official book club of this month is Between Two Fires.
Yes. It's a book I've read a little bit while ago. I'm excited to talk about it with everyone.
Absolutely. And we also have merch. Check that stuff in the description below. But anyways, Rich.
Yep.
Spoiler-free rating out of 5 stars, and give your thoughts too, because I know I was pitching a lot of the book.
That's fine.
I see you're less enthused, but you still seem like you're giving a 3.25.
No, I gave it a 2.75.
Oh, below. I thought it would be above average. Damn. You were giving off neutral energy. I didn't know if you would
Yeah, no. Yeah. Overall, so I'm going to have a very interesting rating, and I've thought about this quite a bit over the past day, and overall, I'd say it's a little bit below average after I've sat and thought on it, more especially because I'm just not as in the reason why I have to give it as low as it is I'm not that intrigued to read on. So that's, I read it, nothing offensive, nothing like, I was regret my time, but I don't particularly want to read on, not a real big interest. So that's why it's lower than some of the other categories in here, but my highest categories was a tie between emotional impact and world building, with my lowest being characters.
Okay, got it.
So that's where I stand on it. Despite me being, you know, thinking it's slightly below average, I do think a lot of people would like it. Maybe it's a personality thing. We'll find out. So what did you give it?
Sorry, in the background right now, I'm totaling so we could see where this ranks our numbers. So I gave this, okay, I just totaled it. Perfect. I gave this a 4.25.
Really great.
Really great. I had a kick-ass time. I would very much recommend this. I would recommend this book to a lot of people. And again, specifically to Grimdark fans who also want to also see a fun plot. What I would say for this book is it's very well-rounded. Here's our category breakdowns down below if you want to look before we get into our spoiler section. But for me, I think the characters, the plot, the world, everything was very well done. And I didn't have a spot where I didn't enjoy the book. I think if there was anything for people not to read this, obviously not Grimdark fans, I would say if you want, maybe this is part of it too, because I like my meaty books where there's more substance to it. This doesn't have much substance, and that's okay. To me, that's totally okay.
Yeah.
So don't expect that going in. This is more entertainment.
Yes.
Have fun. And Rob J. Hayes, his prose was also, again, reminiscent of Abercrombie. I'm now a fan of his writing. I'm going to read his other stuff. So props to Rob J. Hayes on this as well. And now, okay, so with that total of, I gave a 4.25, you give a 2.75. If we do the math on that, that's a 7.
Yep.
And that means it ranks, out of our 6 books, this will be number 4. Because we have, it goes Sword of Kaigan, where we both gave a 5. Then we have By Blood, By Salt, which totals an 8.25, a 4 and a 4.25. Then Orconomics was third, because that totaled 7.75 with our combined. And Where Loyalties Lie is a 7. And then right after that is Small Miracles, and then Murder at Spindle Manor.
Seems right to me. I can't object to that.
Well, it's our average.
Whatever
democracy decides, I guess.
That is true. A democracy between two people.
Is that then a duarchy or something?
Yeah, something like that.
Ooh.
Yeah.
Duarchy. No, yeah.
That's even better. Hey, any restriction on the will of the people is preferable, you know. Now, would it be better if it was one? Preferably me. Yes. But settle for two.
You have to. Are you loyal to the two, the duarchy here?
I'm loyal to one of the duarchy.
We're going to have a quick break from our sponsor. Our loyalties lie with Displate.
Displate has been with us for a long time, sponsoring this channel. We really appreciate them. They offer some great quality products, replacing your crappy paper college posters with nice metal ones that stick on the wall with magnets. Easily swappable. Myself, I actually have like a little stack of Displates, and occasionally I like to swap up the art in my own room. This is the one that's currently in my bedroom right now, little Wheel of Time stuff. But you can get Wheel of Time, Dungeons and Dragons. You think of a franchise, they got something for it. They even have Lonesome Dove posters.
Damn. I'm sure they have a lot of pirate art as well.
They do.
The Pirates of the Caribbean stuff. All of it. They have independent artists who go on here, put out some art, and then it turned into these great metal posters, which you can swap onto your wall without putting any nails into it. It's just a sticker and a magnet. That is it. And they're offering, as always, an up to 30% off discount if you use the code 22RAMBLE, just our channel name, at the checkout. Our link is in the description below. Go ahead, click that, check it out, and use code 2TORAMBLE.
2TORAMBLE, you get a discount, we get money, you support the channel. Everyone wins.
Thanks, everybody.
Bye, everyone.
Back to the episode. All right, we're back. Okay. I'm also sorry to have to say this to everybody else that was going to watch on, but spoiler warning. It's spoiler warning time. Click off if you don't want spoilers for Where Loyalties Lie. We'll give a couple seconds.
And
wouldn't it be fun if we did another song that was another Lord of the Rings song between our spoiler-free and spoiler section? And then between every category, we just did another song as well.
I don't know if our algorithm could handle that. I already know that song, like in the very beginning of our videos, is like,
oh, that cuts a lot out.
It killed a lot of the click through rate. Like that was a filtering process. Mm-hmm. I don't know if we could take two filters.
We want the strong to keep watching.
We only want the best, really.
we then could play like.
See, you're singing too on pitch right now. There you go. There you go. That's a little bit better.
What do you give Emotional Impact out of 5?
I give this a 3.5. That was good
overall. So this is one where your emotion's higher than your total is.
Yes.
Interesting. Okay. I give it 4.25, the same as my total. Really great.
Yep.
Really great, yeah.
No, it, as far as entertainment goes, action, moving from plot point to plot point, like, yeah, no, it gets you to go along. I was excited at exciting times. I was nervous at other times, but yeah, I think it was good. It handled it well.
Yeah, this book was a constant fun and excitement as well. So you have the action scenes. You have some funny humor as well. I think of the spoiler free, I wanted to make it clear. It reminded me a lot of Abercrombie.
The dark humor.
It reminded me a lot. And you had also gruesome scenes too.
Yeah.
And so let's talk some that stuck out. Because we know what it's going for. It's going for that fun, that action, tense kind of stuff. Part one, I already liked how part one started, where the most emotional moment in that was when we were going back and forth between Drake's point of view and Keelan's point of view, our two main pirates we follow throughout the story. And Drake is trying to unite and become king. Keelan has this mysterious past, which we come to find out he was grown up in some nobility. He can't let the pirates know that because that would ruin his ship cred.
Yeah. Yes.
And so Drake is told from the Oracle that for some reason he needs Keelan Stillwater to be a part of his grand plan here. And it's fun how they meet. I like how all the point of view interactions happen here, where Drake sets up a beating on Stillwater, and that's how he gets Stillwater, makes it look like he saves Stillwater from the own beating he set up. And then when they're coming to be attacked by, what was the ship called? Man of War, something like that. When they're coming to be attacked by the ship, Keelan at first, you know, you have a little, you know, Keelan looks like he's running away or sailing away from Drake. He's about to leave. And Drake's like, that bastard, that rat bastard's leaving me. And now they're battling the ship. And all of a sudden, Keelan comes. He's like, ah, and then didn't know whether to be frustrated with Keelan or happy with Keelan. It's like that little saves the day moment. And that's kind of how part one went. It was the little union of Drake and Keelan. It got me immediately invested in their dynamic and relationship of Keelan, this character who was, didn't know if he wanted to follow Drake at all. Just like, you know, he didn't know where his loyalties lied. And Drake, who came across as, I didn't know if this was the villain right away. He seemed very villainy from the get-go and then slowly became more than that. Mm-hmm. All the pirates became, they're more gray than I expected. But I liked how it started, the fun action. We got the quibbles between the characters, that action scene, and a couple others stuck out. But any scene for you in particular you want to highlight?
None of those really stuck out to me. If anything, the drag was Keelan. Like, my investment in him was anytime he's on the page, I did not care. If I was emotionally invested, I was with Drake. Drake was your lovable rogue. Like, I have seen this character done so many times. This time, I think it was done well. I liked it. Mm. And he was fun. Was it in part one with Elena?
With Elena?
Elena meeting her father again for the first time, telling her father that she let Keelan go.
Yeah, I think that was part two or one. It was early on, though.
Okay.
Yeah.
That was a surprisingly, so for people of context, especially, you briefly mentioned it, but yeah, pretty brutal, maybe brutal is the wrong word. It's so basic. You have the scene where Elena is raped right in front of her father. Her father orders it, like her first mate, his first mate to do it in front of his entire crew, which, brutal on like the concept and what happens to her, but it isn't written in a way that, like, really digging into the details, just, I don't know, it handles it, awful scenario, but doesn't go into the grimy details as much as it could have, like, to actually, you know, titillate you, I guess, is the reason why I say that is, like, that's better than trying to make that, yeah, whatever. You get my point. But that was certainly a shocking moment of, like, ooh, this is not a, Like, there's grimdark, and then there's, oh no, your characters are actually suffering. Like, not this kind of fake, like, ooh, it's dark and dreary type of deal. So that was certainly a very shocking moment, and especially, and then her reaction afterward of how it didn't hold the same weight for Elena that maybe a different character would. Like, it's still traumatic, it's still awful, but to her, it's like, that is part of the life there. It's not that wasn't beyond the pale of expectation, which is the more tragic thing. So
that one stuck out to you?
That one stuck out to me early in the book. Beyond that, it was more the curiosity of Drake's plan of, like, I'm curious, I'm wondering.
Yeah.
That was where a lot of my investment was.
Yeah, I really liked the back and forth between Keelan and Elena. And let's hold some character thoughts for these. We can dive into that. I know that's probably that could be a complaint of the book too, of how Elena, Amy, this is definitely a book that does not go into any of the trauma or the assault scene would cause because of who Elena's character is. Mm-hmm. So yeah, let's talk deeply in that characters, but for some of the scenes that were fun and lighthearted in this book, I guess, Keelan, when Amy's in his room,
mm-hmm.
I really thought it was funny that the scene where, Keelan and, you know, Keelan's undressing or something and Amy basically hits him or stabs him. Yeah. Not just hits him, stabs him. And she doesn't want him to touch her or anything. And Keelan's going, like, the last thing I would want to do is touch you. What are you doing? What are you thinking? I'm not like those guys in there. Stop it. Holy crap, woman. It's like, and then she's like, you're sure? He's like, yes, I would never do that. Oh my God. Walks out and his shipmate is like, oh, the girl you ordered is in there, by the way. He's like, I know. I'm just like, everything's just so, they're all pirates. They all lust. They kill. They're horrible. And it's just such a train wreck and fun to watch.
Not a great plan by her, though.
No, not at all.
Not the best plan. Like,
it's so funny. One,
yeah, we'll get that into characters, but like for character that's supposed to be fairly smart and conniving, not the best plan to stab the supposed captain with pottery.
Well, I think Drake's the more smart one than Amy you're talking about.
Amy's supposed to be smart.
Amy, that scene just stabbed.
Okay.
You like the Drake scenes where I liked how smart he was, where you had the him letting that guy go, who basically he's like, hey, what did you witness here when we just sacked the ship? And the guy goes, I, the ship literally, like, you moved your hand and you caused the person to like,
the
explode.
The ship came alive and attacked.
And Drake goes, okay, you're allowed to live. Go tell that story. Yep. This book got the tone so right for me of, hey, you're not supposed to, like, you're not supposed to think these are good people. It's grimdark. You're supposed to be interested in them. And it constantly did that. And also, the pace of this book I really enjoyed too. Man, it was a very fun ride for me. Did you enjoy the fight scenes quite a bit?
They're fine.
Yeah.
I am very middling at the book. I apologize.
Oh no, I mean, I've been middling on books.
Yeah, so the fight scenes were quick paced. It's similar style to Abercrombie, except Abercrombie goes into a bit more detail and they're a bit more drawn out, visceral. This keeps a little bit more bird's eye view. You know, we're describing it, but doesn't get into the grimy details of the direct action. If that
sweat and piss and
yeah, does not go into those details as much.
Yeah, this prose more so. I like how it frames the things. We'll talk that in prose, I guess. But
if we're talking emotional impact, I want to say something that was oddly jarring and I feel like it took a little bit out of the sales for me of I was expecting sales. More. Keelan had a duel prepared. Like, this big monster of a man is coming in and there's supposed to be this big duel and he's drunk. He has to get sobered up for it. And whole hubbub. And the whole duel is just like that of, like, Keelan rolls in and, like, pokes him. And it's like, I win. It's like, oh, Okay. That's all. That's all the action we get. I was kind of itching for something more exciting. That's all right. That was definitely a downer. Maybe it was supposed to subvert your expectations.
I really enjoyed that. Yeah. I enjoyed that because, well, we got battles everywhere galore already. It wasn't like that was more of a 2-chapter sequence where we got, okay, basically you're gonna have to fight this Khan guy who he met at the beginning of the book, and you get this bravado of people are whispering that he like slays monsters, and he heard that one time he did this to, oh my god, is he basically the devil reborn, and then all these things, and it's that subversion of poke, and then Khan's like, oh, you definitely would have killed me. I'm okay.
I guess, yeah, it's the subversion, but I was a little let down. That emotionally, I felt cheated. I felt I was promised something more exciting.
I was okay with it because
exciting or more funny.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? Of go that full Indiana Jones moment of just pull out the pistol and shoot him, like that level of ridiculous. Where this is, it is technically a fight. It is still a duel. It's just real quick. I'm just rolling and poke. Like, okay. That was fine.
I guess since it was only like a 2-chapter sequence, it wasn't like the payoff of the book. I was because we were seeing at that time was new. What was the city's new?
New Severlane?
New Severlane. So we were seeing how do people act here and survive? What is New Severlane like? And you have Khan show up. And so it's a mini sequence in that time they're there. But I thought it was fun.
Okay,
I think the bigger payoff moments is probably when we're talking about the convergence of Tanner Black plotline with Keelan's, with Drake's against the I'll say Kingdom. I'll check what is the name of them. Sarth. So them.
Sure.
How did you like how all of the plot points came together?
It was fine. I saw the plot most, and I guess we'll get into that later, but
sure.
I wasn't emotionally as invested. I thought it felt more like a and then instead of a therefore.
Okay, that would be a plot discussion then.
Yes.
Got it. All right, anything else you want to mention? That thing that you didn't like that kept it from going higher, things that you're just... Because it's hard when you're in the middle to talk much about it. I've been there.
If anything, I will give just my 2 cents on the ending. The ending did not really work for me that well. I thought it was the puzzle pieces just fit too neatly, too fast, and I didn't really buy Tanner Black's turn. And so I didn't. It just ended in a way that I was like, it's fine, but I wasn't interested in reading on. So that was how I felt emotionally there.
Tanner Black going teaming up with Drake.
Yes.
I really like the scene where we get Drake's fear for the first time of Tanner Black just opens his mouth, is ready to cut off his tongue.
Mm-hmm.
And Drake having this entire time, the Oracle seeing the future, but also seeing that it's not always accurate. So Drake knows, wait, it's right, but also doesn't predict everything, doesn't say everything that's about to happen.
Well,
so
also, Drake was he could live without his tongue. He can die a lot later without a tongue.
You're damn right.
So
so there was that moment of fear. But okay. Want to go on to thought-provoking this then?
Sure.
What'd you give that out of 5?
N.A.
I also gave it an N.A. Yes.
There's nothing here, but it also is not going for anything. I don't think there's anything of substance there.
It's definitely... So if there's anything, it's the title's Where Loyalties Lie. It's about what are you more loyal to, of hiding your past, because obviously the characters have their themes of pirates not wanting to talk about the noble past, or in Drake's case, it's not talking about his mother that was a witch, was it?
Yeah.
And so them hiding their past, sorry if I have that slightly wrong, but there's themes there, but
we don't even know the full extent of his.
Yeah.
His mother's more, I think, more than just a witch, but
But I'm with you. I put not applicable, just because I don't think the author was going for for entertainment, fun, probably not worthy of discussion there.
I would agree.
Then let's go on to characters.
Sure.
What'd you give characters out of 5 stars?
2.5.
This is where it disappointed you the most. Yeah, okay.
Disappointed me. Most especially Keeland. I think his character voice was not unique enough to really stand out. It was honestly kind of hard to tell him and Drake apart sometimes, even though like it just seemed like a worst version of Drake. But not any distinct difference. The rest of the characters, I think Tanner Black is a good setup character. I thought there would be a bit more to him, but ultimately kind of disappointed in him. Yeah, the only ones that I thought had some good character gravitas was Drake, because I liked the dynamic between Drake and Beck. Their little budding relationship back and forth is, I think, the most fun between the characters, but the relationship between Drake and Keelan just felt very forced together, and I didn't care at all between them. Same thing with Keelan and Elena. It's kind of told about this relationship, and we don't really get much shown. I don't really see anything there. It's just told to us that they have been together, so I didn't enjoy any of that. So I like Drake. So I was mostly disappointed.
Yeah, I do disagree. I gave it a 4.25, really great. I enjoyed the characters quite a bit.
What did you like the most?
Let's go. So want to go Keelan first? And sure. Then, okay, we got the Ship of Phoenix, where we got Keelan, Smythe, Amy, that crew. Keelan, why I do think he was distinct from Drake, was immediately we get from his character point of view is he's no longer the hero. He's no longer trying. One doesn't want to be king, but he had this past of being born into nobility and was also a part of Tanner Black's crew, and that's how he met Elena. But every decision he's making in the current day, he's basically reminding himself of he would have gone and tried to save the day at one point. But that was another Keelan. Like he's kind of just a shell of his former self. It's that person who is a pirate and kind of lost everything and is now just holding onto the ship of a ship that isn't even fully loyal to him, where you have this shipmate Smythe, who everyone's voting for, kind of wanting to take his position. So he's kind of on rocky grounds. But his is just more so he kind of gave up and is looking for something to follow. And that's where Drake comes in and fills that role of maybe that person is worth something, worth fighting for. Maybe I should be more loyal to that guy. So I kind of liked his aimlessness of just, hey, I used to be in the past I would want to be a more active person or save the day, but maybe not so much anymore. So I think Keelan and Drake's relationship is Drake is the person that's giving Keelan some sort of motivation. He gives him an example of something to fight for, essentially. And then Drake he's the most active character. He's the one that I think has the most depth of anybody. And I feel like you're to pick a protagonist, it's him. We start the book with him, and the arc at the end is him getting his, what do I like to call it? What's that British movie with the spot? I can't even remember, but a lot of British movies end like this. I love it, where he's like, gets the girl.
Oh.
You know?
Yeah.
Gets the girl, save the day, going on, see you next book. Yeah. he ended up, him and his relationship with Beck, as you were discussing.
Talk about James Bond?
Not James Bond. No, there was this other...
That's the rule that of is, James Bond.
That is, but it's...
He accomplishes the mission, he gets the girl, and then rides off to the sunset. Next book, girl is gone, new mission.
I found it.
No, Kingsman, new mission, new girl.
Kingsman, the Secret Service. Have you ever seen Kingsman?
Yeah. That's Bond. Like that's
Yeah, that stuff. Yeah. I was trying to think of that specific movie. But no, that's not a Bond movie, is it?
It's
inspired by
it's a spoof of Bond.
Spoof, yes.
It's not a full spoof, but that's the Bond thing.
Yeah. I got
the gentlemanly spy.
I got those vibes. I enjoyed that. But yes. You said Keelan less interested in, Drake more interested in.
Oh, yeah. No, I actively didn't like, and I was bored by Keelan and his whole POV. Drake was more interesting than that. I think he was handled pretty well. He reminded me a lot of Thousand Deaths of Ardor Ben.
Drake.
Like, yeah. He was a good Ardor Ben.
Ah.
You know, like, all the character traits that Ardor Ben is supposed to have, and we just didn't think he did.
Mm.
Drake Morass has it. Like, yeah. He's got the sauce. He's got the gravitas, and I enjoyed that part of him. And yeah, and mostly it's the mystery around him. Hey, what's this prophecy? What's his past? He seems to be almost as tall as the tales tell about him. So that's the stuff that's actually good. But beyond, actually, a character that I liked surprisingly more than I thought was Princess.
Yeah.
Just for one particular moment of Drake praising his first mate, and then also there was a moment where he says you're not gonna get Beck is gonna take your cabin, and he grimaces and then says okay, and Drake's says that's why I'll never make him a captain of his own ship. He doesn't have the stones to actually buck authority. He doesn't have that strong will. And he'll always bend the knee, which makes him a great first mate, just a terrible captain. And what a backhanded compliment. Mm-hmm. You know, like, he does really appreciate him as a first mate. He's loyal to the best. And yeah. So I liked that dynamic as well.
Yeah, that was fun.
But everyone else, meh.
What'd you think of Beck? The Arbiter, Beck and Drake's relationship. You said you enjoyed that a bit.
I liked their banter back and forth. I liked Beck was fine, I guess. I don't think we're supposed to get a lot into her. We don't know too much about her other than
Drake finds her very attractive.
Drake finds her attractive, and she's a woman tough as nails. And, you know, that's about all we got from her. So I don't have a lot of thoughts about her. Maybe we'll get more.
I thought you meant their relationship. You liked their dynamic.
Oh, I just
that was
like
all, yeah.
When they were together on fun, the yeah. page, their banter back and forth in the relationship, but here and there, like, that was fun. Gotcha. It's a fun dynamic, but as a character on her own, it's fine. We just don't get a lot from her.
Yeah. Drake's character having this oracle talk to him and this whole plan he has to become king and unite the pirates, the One Piece. We just find
yes, the king of the pirates.
Except it's grimdark. Actually, it is One Piece. I haven't read One Piece, so I wouldn't know. It's not. I imagine it's not grimdark. Because Luffy seems very positive. I know he's a
yeah, go-getter. But there's grim moments.
Grim moments. Okay,
but I wouldn't call it grimdark. No.
But yes. So Drake and his motivation being very clear. I do think you mentioned moments with the princess moment. I think the characters in this book are just a series of moments.
Mm-hmm.
Where it's the small things that just made me more endearing to them, but also what I think these are great anti-heroes because it effectively for Keelan, for Drake, for Elena, for each of these characters, Tanner Black's just straight evil, but you know, you have these characters who are shown to have all their vices, but for some reason I'm rooting for them when it comes to these big moments. And for me, like I said, the first scene was Drake of, hey, did he burn Black Sands? You know, that's first the question you're asking. And then, or at least other pirates are asking that.
Well, and even us, the audience, because he says yep. like, oh no, that's the tale we're going to tell. Like, mm-hmm. don't let it out that.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And so immediately I'm going, oh, we're following the villain's point of view. So what was very special about Drake's character is I started off going, okay, villain's point of view, now Keelan's our hero, right? Mm. And so I was going, Drake, bad guy, Keelan, good guy for part one. And already in part one, it, you know, then Drake, you know, has the whole ploy with Keelan of faking a beating on him because he needs Keelan as part of this plan. And slowly throughout the book, I'm now rooting for Drake and going, wait a second. Is he a good guy? Am I supposed to root for him? So it went from, oh, I know where this is going. He's the bad guy to, oh, I'm on Drake's side and I like the bromance he has with Keelan. So that transitioned for me at some point, part two, somewhere in there. And I was like, oh, okay, this is fun. And then we get introduced to Tanner Black, which I go, ah, Tanner Black and Elena adds a whole new dynamic between our other main characters because we have Tanner Black, this ruthless pirate who is a shell of the previous Black that we hear legends and stories about. But the couple scenes that stick out, one being the assault scene with his daughter. Of his daughter basically lets Keelan go, and Tanner Black is furious at that and lets his crewmates, I don't know if that's allowed on YouTube, but assault her in front of everybody. And so you're immediately showing this guy's basically irredeemable. And you get other little details about him where Elena, as she's meeting her father, also Elena's character says a lot about Tanner Black as well, because you see how the result of this assault, where it's not one of those books where that is seen as to the character traumatic. To Elena, it's like another Tuesday, which
I mean, it's bad. It's humiliating. She doesn't like it. It's not, but yeah, that's no, not, it's
relatively,
not the,
yeah,
it is not the worst thing that's ever happened in her life.
Yeah. And that just shows what that does. So this is where it can get more, I see a lot of people couldn't like this. Maybe that's a scene that people just would stop reading too, because it just gets too mm-hmm. traumatic. But what that, her reaction to that, what that does is shows, oh, this isn't the worst thing Tanner Black's ever done. This is another Tuesday. So that scene then effectively made me go, all right, this father figure, this pirate captain, that was nothing. You just showed me the climax of a book of something so horrific that would happen. And so her reaction to that and the relationship with her father made me immediately intrigued and seeing where that was going. And you throw Keelan in the mix, and now I'm going, oh, wait, the character I'm rooting for is in this mess over here? What's going to happen? And we have Tanner Black. Another scene that I kind of liked, just a part of his character, was when Elena was going back to see Tanner Black and say, hey, I just saw Keelan. There's this new... I just ran into him on the island. And
New Severlyn.
And before walking in to see him at the brothel, every time she would describe that and how everybody looks to Tanner Black, and then her saying she wouldn't even speak first because Tanner Black always must have the first and last word. Tanner Black always must, or else, you know, you'll get his wrath. And that, so it's a little mystery behind Tanner Black as well that I'm very interested about, was this ruthless, evil guy has, what, 9 kids, and apparently is the only person he loves. It was 9 kids. So like
he had 9 kids, but not all of them survived. I think only like 4 survived.
Like we have Blue Black, one of the with the blue beard, mm-hmm. But has these kids. And now I'm wondering, what woman swayed Tanner Black to like have kids and be, because from Elena, what she says is that the only person Tanner Black ever loved was his wife. We don't see that. We hear that from Elena. But we meet Elena's mother, who seems to have dementia of some sort, or memory losses. And that gave an immediate intrigue to me of Tanner Black. You know, we see the examples of bad, 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 evil. How, wait a second, what's their relationship like? Why is that the one person he loves? What's going on there? So I'm curious about reading book 2 and seeing if that gets explored more. That effectively hooked me and went, ooh, okay. What is going on here? But anyways, I'm rambling on about Tanner Black stuff. I also know it's hard when you're neutral about a book to talk about it, so I'm trying to talk more than you are this episode.
I appreciate it. Yeah. I love to hear what really grabbed you on it. Yeah.
What about Tanner Black from your perspective?
Yeah, absolutely nothing. It's a bad guy. And that was about it. I actually have more negative things on. I would have, especially with how it hit his ending, I would have appreciated a bit more on the fact that the ending justifies, like, he does decide to bend the knee to Drake, supposedly. Like,
well, he says he won't bend the knee, but
yeah, like,
I'll call you king, but just remember, I could have cut your tongue off. Just remember, I had you, and I let you go. I spared you. This is my deal, not yours.
Yeah. But he also is still agreeing to give, like, half. supposedly, he's agreeing to all these things that Drake wanted, but with his caveats, of course. Like, but he walked in there like, no, I'm just going to kill Drake. That's this. But the turn there is Keelan convincing Tanner that, no, you expect to kill Drake and then take all these ships, take all of his men and lead. I'm telling you that's not going to happen. everyone's afraid of you. And Tanner's going like, yeah, I want them to be afraid of me. He's like, yeah, they're just going to run. They're not actually going to follow you. Yeah. You are going to be, you're scattering everyone to the wind. And it seems like that is the moment where Tanner like agrees and goes like, yep, I do scare everyone away. And that's not, that does not make for a king. Does it? It doesn't make for a good leader. And their people will run away from me. I would have liked a little bit more on that switch, because he walked in there fully convinced to just kill Drake. So him switching like that, I didn't particularly buy, or at least more into that scene of like why he would, because I thought they were going a direction of playing on the back and forth between like maybe a bit longer between Tanner and Keelan. Because honestly, there was a moment where I thought Tanner was going to say like quietly to Keelan of like, why would you follow Drake and not follow me? And how much that betrayal really hurt Tanner, and Tanner really saw something in Keelan and treated him like a son. And the fact that he was betrayed and feels like, oh, you're just a backstabbing son of a bitch. And then change it to,
that's interesting. Yeah.
Oh, actually, I terrified even you away. And like, I valued your friendship. I valued you, like cared for you as a son. And if I scared you away, how am I supposed to expect to bring all of the pirates together? I don't think it went into that. I would have liked more there to justify that switch.
That's interesting, because I did read into that of him saying to Keelan of like, why are you following Drake and not me? Like he did mention that to Keelan. And I did get that from the book. Maybe didn't like zone in on that point, but he does say to Keelan about how he is surprised of like, you're now all of a sudden following Drake, but you left me. He says that to him. But I see your point of maybe
I saw
dive
the book.
Deeper.
The book was more saying, why are you deciding to follow Drake? You're just a backstabbing. Like you're backstabbing everyone. Like, why would you backstab me? You backstab my daughter. Like, why would you follow Drake? You have no spine. You have no. I thought it was more about Keelan rather than about Tanner.
But then Keelan explains to him like, "Hey, Drake is the one that can actually unite us. Like, I believe in him. I don't believe in you. You inspire fear. Drake's actually. I've been with Drake now. I believe it." Like, he's given his pitch of, "Hey, I'm the one that backstabbed you, but guess what? I'm following him. So take my word for what you will. You know I'm a backstabber." And I'm putting all my chips in on Drake. So it's kind of like that decision making. But from Tanner Black's point of view, I could see how it could maybe dive deeper into that and that be a little like quick or frustrating to read that.
Or
I really did
a scene before to add in like Tanner leaning on the fear and the fear just not working the same way. Like, especially add in maybe him trying to use fear to control his daughter and the daughter leaving, betraying him in some way, like add on to it of, oh, if I can't even get my daughter to fall in line and follow me, how am I going to get the rest of the part? Like, that would have been a better argument. I just didn't buy the switch.
Yeah. I definitely bought it because of the Keelan's point he makes of why he's following Drake. And also, they're kind of put in a pinch where they're being attacked. This is a point where it's not him ruling by fear without anybody who could usurp him. Now the nation of Sarth, was it Sarth or the kingdom?
The kingdom.
They're coming at. So now there's an actual threat. And so he can't just rule without have this reign of terror without any consequences. He actually has to choose a smart route of, okay, there's a bigger army out there now. So it's one, the external threat, and two, Keelan's point he makes to him, which that's why the turn made a lot of sense to me. And I think the subtext there too is his daughter and Keelan's relationship of that frustrating type. Okay. Also this, his answer to Drake was very believable to me of him saying, I'm not going to bend the knee for you. Like, don't ever expect that. And him saying to Drake that, just remember, I had you at knife throw. I could have cut your tongue out. Remember who really has the power here. I'm allying with you for convenience and for my own interests, not because I think you, I'm going to bow down to you. So that's what I got from Tanner's point of view. It's not like he's all of a sudden Drake's best friend and going to fight side by side.
He agreed to give half the loot to Drake and also rally all of his ships to fight at Drake's command. Like, he agreed to basically everything except, like, I won't, like, you know, kiss your ring, basically. I'll call you king, but don't expect... Yeah, I don't know. He basically gave him everything.
Well, it's not like he can just stop that the next instant. I think he still has commands over his troop. He's allowing Drake to lead them into battle, to fight. But where do those loyalties actually lie to Tanner Black? I think it just goes back to that loyalty thing of, hey, I'm with you because this is convenient for me right now. And don't expect this. And I bet Book 2 will explore this more. There's probably going to be some messy situations.
As soon as the threat is gone.
I mean, what do you think Tanner Black's going to do? Nothing changed about his character and internal thoughts. It's more so, what is he doing practically to handle the threat? That's how I took a lot of it. I do think that Tanner Black, as you would consider him our villain character.
Yeah, sure.
Because then the actual threat is, we don't see the any individual like bat. We see an admiral, for example, but to us, we just see the threat of an army. We get introduced to, doesn't someone meet Khan at the end? We meet them, but we don't get much of them. Right now, it's just this ominous threat. So we got to know all the pirates in this book. So something I'm excited about book two is to see, ooh, are we now going to explore a lot more about the nation? The Sarth. I keep saying that word wrong. Damn, I should have wrote it down. I also liked I liked seeing Blue Black characters as well. That's his eldest son, and his and Elena's relationship was super neat, where Elena is going to attack that ship and kills everybody on board, right? It goes there. It's a guild ship, and those are off limits. And that's where she gets in trouble, goes back to her father and said, her father finds out that she killed everybody on the ship, and that's where he sends her away, basically.
Sends her away and basically tortures her best friend.
Yes. Who was addicted to Lucy or some drug of some form. And I like how that was set up too, of obviously he would be able to reveal that with the drug addiction. But Blue Black, I like how he was introduced as the coward kid who is who likes to show his chest, but really when it comes to it is he's gonna sail away at moment's notice. He's no Tanner Black.
Yeah.
But okay, I'm spitballing at a bunch of characters. Anybody else that stood out? There's one more I have, but go ahead. Do you have anything that comes to mind? Anyone that comes to mind?
Amy.
Yes, Amy. Yep.
She's fine enough of a character. I clearly more set up for there's gonna be more for her book two to some degree. She's established as being very witty and smart, and she's conniving, so she's trying to maneuver her way into, you know, onto the ship. She convinces Keelan to let her into the cabin, and as soon as she's kicked out of the cabin, she's like, I'm going to work my way back there and convince it's all that. But then comes from the very beginning of our introduction to her, and she just stabs the captain.
I'm almost curious, is she like an arbiter, one of those witches of some type? I don't know if book two is going to reveal something like that.
But it's so dumb. That's such a dumb thing.
Oh, the stabbing?
Yeah.
Oh.
In what realm do you think like that's going to go well? Is that part of her plan?
Whatever.
It worked, I guess, but...
I think she was genuinely fearing for her life of like, hey, this is...
Yeah.
Okay, I'm going to die. Damn it. Kind of like a knee-jerk.
Yeah.
Type of reaction. How funny was that scene? Okay, maybe not to you, but how funny was the scene what described earlier, emotional impact, with Keelan saying, oh no, nothing to do with you, walks outside, and the shipmate's just like, yeah, the girl, you're... I was like, ah, Keelan. Yeah. Ah. That gave me another little moment. All these characters for me felt very like real pirates, and just I was part of the grim world with them. I liked how they interacted with the world, and
it was Pirates of the Caribbean if the pirates were actually more pirate like rather than dirty rogues.
Yeah.
Like as much as you like Captain Jack Sparrow is...
Nope. Captain Jack Sparrow. You always have to say it like that. Yeah. You never say it normally.
He's very much a Disney pirate. Like, yeah, you know?
That's so offensive.
These pirates are actually pirates.
Yep.
So.
Definitely.
Yeah, that is a point to the positive.
Mm-hmm. Then we get with Khan, the big guy who he mm-hmm. pokes in the groin. We get little glimpses of him of he's that big brute personality type, likes his woman big. Well, until it's his third wife, then he wants his third wife to just be a fighter. That's why Elaine's a good fighter. Too small of a waist to bear more children for me, but you know, that'll be a... And you immediately get this brute of a character, Khan, who fills his role nicely. Reminds me of other characters I've read too. So yeah. That's why this didn't floor me. It didn't get high, but really great overall. I thought it was... I'm going to read book two, definitely. The characters are what hooked me, I think, the most.
Okay.
Okay, anything else?
No, let's get into plot.
Plot, I gave it a 4.25, really great.
I gave it a 2.75.
Below average. Yes.
Yeah, overall, I think there were some of the big plot moments just did not land for... So, like, we were talking about the ending, didn't really land for me. A lot of the plot points felt just more contrived conveniences to... I felt the hand of the author just like manipulating events to like just push things along rather than natural course. And yeah, so I did not enjoy the plot that much here. So, but what did you think was so great about it?
Yeah,
what'd you love about it?
So to break this down, we had four parts, mm-hmm. right? There was four parts in the plot. I guess we could call the A plot, I always get the letters wrong too. I guess okay, the background plot. Let's call it that one.
That's B.
There we go. B for background. I'll remember that. So the B plot in the background is the pirates need to unite in some form because they're going to start being wiped out. There's pirates everywhere. Every island's inhabited by pirates. Holy crap, pirates galore. And so their way of life is being threatened. That's the underlying B plot. Then we get the A plots of I think each character story with Drake's is more tied to the overall B plot than it. They all are in some way, but his story, Elena's story, et cetera. First off, I love the pace of this. I think it was each part was justified and each had its own very fun momentum. Like I was mentioning at the first part was Drake and Keelan uniting. I did like a quick note of what happened at the end of each part, just so I'd remember. Mm-hmm. Like for example, the end of part two is when they take the ship the man of warship. So part one was Keelan and Drake uniting. Part two was Keelan and Drake getting that, getting the ship, the man of warship, and end of part three was this moment where after Elaina, so this was after the island was created and they had the burning of Black Sands and the burning of the city I can't name happened, and they have the new city, the new islands created.
Severlane,
man, you're good at that. And so that's where Elaina sees Keelan again, and well, apparently Keelan has a new woman now, and Elaina doesn't like that very much.
I know you don't like the miscommunication trope much. What do you think of that?
Between Keelan and Amy?
Because
and
at that there, point, nothing went on between Keelan and Amy. Mm-hmm. Like, there was nothing there. It was quite literally, woman in proximity.
Yeah.
You've chosen another woman over me! It's like...
I loved it. I like how they did that trope just because it fits Elaina is the first thing, but also Keelan, clearly Keelan, the only girl in the world isn't Elaina to him. But so to Elaina, she's so heartbroken by that moment, just at the thought that he's...
Yet
just at the thought of it.
Yet
you know?
She has admitted like, yeah, no, we've slept with other people. Like that's not an issue. It's just... we were actual soulmates. We'll always come back to each other.
And it was the first time he denied her. So she puts together going, wait a second. This is the first time this was not allowed. What is going on? And so it made sense why she came to that conclusion of, well, hey, let's go do our usual thing. And he goes, not now. And so immediately where her head goes makes sense of, oh, you must have found somebody, you bastard. That's why it worked for me. And then part four, we get the big battle happens. And, the very ending of the book left me with a nice hook, a really nice hook, where Drake is apparently going to have to marry Elaina to forge an alliance, a more secure alliance with Tanner Black. I'm like, ooh, what's going to happen there? And then we also get the ending with Elena, which I didn't fully understand. The person that we saw at the end, did you get that part? I didn't fully get the very last chapter where Elena is like literally the last couple pages of the book. Could you help explain that for me? Because I think that part went over my head, but I was very invested with the ending of Drake. I'm just trying to remember.
Give me more of the context. I'm trying to remember.
Well, Elena, at the end of the book, someone comes and visits. I don't know if we heard their character name before, but I was just, I didn't hear the name. So I was like, oh, what was this just something we didn't address too much? And it's a little hook to set up something in the next book? Or what was that?
I didn't really see much of the comment. I just thought it was like, oh, a mystery to add on to the next book.
Okay, that's how I took it.
Like a mysterious individual.
I didn't know if I missed something.
No.
Okay.
No, I don't think it was a reveal or anything.
Got it. Okay, I didn't know if that was a reveal. I've been like, oh, I read something wrong. But okay, yeah. So I guess overall what I loved was the pacing of the book was super fun. The end of each part, each had their momentum. So again, part one with the ship, part one coming together, part two, getting a ship. Also, the destruction of the past island. Part three, forging this new island. Part four, coming together. I also loved the dynamics between. So we had Drake and his crew and Keelan coming together versus Tanner Black and us getting to see these two pirates that are opposed to one another. How are they going to end up coming together in that moment? Worked for me, so that's also why I liked it more. But always very fun, and the thing I said earlier in the spoiler-free part about it doesn't sacrifice characters for plot. Why I think this one's good is because it handles the four, and we get more than that. We also get one-off characters like Keeble and others, but and Khan is another point of view character. It handles each character point of view really well, and like making them all interweave into the main storyline. Whereas. I won't spoil anything from Abercrombie's books, but sometimes there can be the complaints, which, you know, I'll join on to some of those complaints where it's like, oh, you finished the whole story and like, oh, now it feels like a setup for the next story. This one felt like we got a story of its own and it's setting up more fun or disasters to come. But yeah, I also didn't expect coming into this book that it was going to be a multi-point of view. I didn't know what to expect. And I really like the plot aspect. This was super unique of having ship point of views was so neat to me.
You mentioned that at the beginning. I noticed that's kind of the chapter titles, but you didn't see it as just generally it's Drake, Elena, and Keelan point of views. You took it as like it's the ship point of view?
Well, it's following the ship itself, like the people on the ship. Like Keelan gets his point of view, but then we get the ship Phoenix. And you know, when we get Keeble's point of view or Khan. So whatever's happening on that ship, if we go back to the Phoenix or back to the Fortune, even if Keelan's not on there, like that, we will see the happenings on the ship. So it's almost like the ship has its own chapters of like what's going on. You know, it's like a location of just going, okay, let's go back to Carbranth or let's go back to. The Shattered Plains or what have you. Instead of that, it's ship.
I just saw it as like the crew of this, like it's not the ship because there are too many times where they're on the island doing stuff where they're not on the ship. So I didn't see it that way, but fair enough.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's just like this group with mostly the three POVs with some of their sideline POVs.
Yeah, we did get those sideline characters, and we would get a lot of them too when interacting with the ship or going on the island too, because when we'd go to the island, it would be location of like where I can't for the life of me say the name, but
New Severlane.
I keep wanting to say New Smyrna for some reason.
New Smyrna.
New Severlane. Okay. So it's New Severlane, and so then that would be the location part. So you know how a typical chapter title would be from Glockta. Or from Logan Nine Fingers, or like that's your character. But yeah, just a fun little quirky thing that I liked. Also, was there any okay, you gave it disappointed, so I won't say favorite part. What didn't work the most for you then? What was something that you wanted more of? What's your criticism? Because let's give some value. It's an SPFBO thing. We're here to critique and analyze. What does your literary self say here?
Here's the thing is most of the ongoing moments, like the setup moments, I think worked really well for me. And I liked the non-consequential moments. But when we got to something consequential, it didn't land very well for me. For example, everything with the pleasure boat island, the floating island thing.
Sorry, you just reminded me of something.
But that cool in concept of what it is, and that, you know, we get to find out, like, oh, Drake actually owns this whole floating island thing.
It's like the merry fuck.
Yeah. And so he has all the, like, that's how he has all his money, why he's so rich. And it's like, okay, I'm one left turn. Okay. He apparently has all this. That explains how he's going to fund everything. And because you thought, like, oh man, he's really trapped in a corner. He does not have enough money or ships or anything. It's like, well, conveniently, he has an island that's literally made of just money and ships.
The Count of Monte Cristo. The Count of Drake.
It is. Yeah. It's a Count of Monte Cristo moment.
Yeah.
But then he goes there. It's like, ah, all of my money. Like, someone came in and, like, just sunk all my money. Mm-hmm. Ah, and then goes. I just went, all right. And now we got ships, I guess. I felt like it was more of a justification just, like, to push the plot along rather than it just did not feel very organic to me. And it felt, and now we're here, now we're doing this. That popped up several times. I mentioned it with the ending that I just didn't buy that switch. So yeah, most of those big moments or supposedly big moments, I did not particularly enjoy.
Yeah. I just felt
underwhelmed.
Yeah.
On those. So I was like,
not even whelmed, just underwhelmed.
Yeah. Like I'm going, like, hey, look, I like this setup. I like the setup. And then we get to the actual climax of each part. I'm going, oh, okay. Like I wasn't as invested in some of the bigger battle scenes and how it turned out.
I do like how the plot that we got all felt necessary, and that the stuff we didn't need to focus on was off page. So for example, the Drake and that island situation of seeing that he was trying to become king. There was a Drake that this book didn't start with, that happened before the pages of this book began, mm-hmm. which will trickle into a little bit of world building. But the story that we're getting is being told for a reason, where I really like the efficiency of, we don't need to see, I'm so sorry to the fans here. I am neutral on the book, but the Count of Monte Cristo can, you know, drag on a little bit. It can drag on quite a bit. Like, here's exactly how I'm going.
Wait.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, you rated this book higher than the Count of Monte Cristo.
Yes. Well, that's also because I'm more neutral on Monte Cristo. Hey, I could find something just as absurd for you, I'm sure.
Yeah, I know.
All our reviews are on the internet.
Yeah, no. I could
nitpick.
Yeah.
Okay. So if, overall for me,
I was just mentioning that to build the people
animosity.
Onto my side. Yeah, yeah, no. I know people are clicking on, they're loving this book, and I'm like, I gotta sow some seeds of distrust.
Of loyalties.
I need
yes.
to get the loyalty back on my side.
Oh,
he doesn't like Monte Cristo.
No, the past two SBFBO books, I can already see it because they're not posted yet, but I already know. Like, I was the negative Nancy.
Yeah.
And so I was like, man, well, I think they're why is somebody clicking on a video of a book they probably enjoyed? They probably like the book. That's usually you're rolling the dice. Like 90% of people are going, like, I want to hear about the book I like.
True.
And when we both, or the rare case where a book's real bad and people agree, and it's like a when in truth mm-hmm. scenario where we both hate it. There's those are more rare though.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah.
Okay. Anything else?
Anything remaining with plot?
I do like maybe just more small moments, because again, what I really liked about this plot, the pacing, the small moments that were mentioned before. Here's like one or two that I jotted down. Okay, these are two really fun plot moments and why I just got into the vibe of this pirate sphere. Maybe this should have been more of a character point, but Drake, when he allowed the Admiral to live, and just Drake's as his leadership. I should have focused on this more, but sorry to repeat character stuff. But Drake showing, when I was starting to become more and more sympathetic to him, was he let the Admiral that they took, everybody kind of wanted him dead, and he's like, what greater punishment than making him see how successful we are. And then him going into battle and riling up the troops of like, and then back going like, hey, that was a pretty good speech. He's like, ooh, okay. It's just that I guess that's some of the fun dynamics that we didn't specifically talk about that I appreciated between Beck and Drake, and him giving great speeches to the troop. That kind of stuff was fun.
Oh yeah, no, the best part was Drake giving his speeches, Drake being Drake, and then Drake and Beck, the back and forth banter stuff was good.
That was very fun, and I liked the competency of Drake too. We talked about it earlier, but the scene where he lets the guy go who says basically the ship came alive and you...
Which actually did, which adds another mystery of like, wait a minute, that's true though. Drake literally did, like the ship came alive and apparently he got the ship from a goddess. Like,
want to talk world building now?
Yeah,
That's a good transition into that. You're going to see a lot of similar ratings from here. I also gave it 4.25, really great.
3.5, I thought it was good. It's good
higher for you. Yeah. Okay, good, yeah.
No, plenty of good questions. You keep asking yourself what's going on. The world feels alive. You feel immersed. One of the best aspects of the book for me.
The best gem for me of the world is the Admiral who they catch and how distraught he is that there's an arbiter back on their side.
Yeah.
That moment for me led to so many questions and intrigue into this world. Just the religious aspect and who the Admiral is and what he's being told, what their culture is. Because that scene alone just made me go, all right, a lot of questions that led to was, why is apparently arbiters aren't on the side of Drake and the Pirateer and Rin. And like, apparently this is something that just doesn't happen. Why is that? Why is this so earth-shattering for the admirable. And then, okay, then why is she on Drake's side? So it led to so many fascinating questions about...
The main thing for the Admiral is you start looking at the Arbiter Beck, and you see that the magic is linked to her religion, her faith, whatever order she follows. And it is connected to that, not... Oh, she has this power, and so she is a part of this religion. And the Admiral saying the fact that she can still use her powers, like, she has switched over to your side, and she actually is willing to work to help you. Her powers shouldn't work anymore. The fact that they still do means she still has the God's good graces.
And that breaks his mind.
What does that mean?
Yeah.
So that was good. Great questions to add on, and... Definitely, as the book went on, you went, oh, these gods are actually not myths. They actually are real. The more details you find out, like, Rin actually is a goddess, and like, I'm pretty sure Drake actually has met her.
Right.
So, that's not fake.
Yeah.
Like, the goddess literally sent a gigantic sea monster because Beck kept mentioning her god's name. On the boat.
Did you like the different monsters we got? Like the pet centipede and...
I liked the centipede. That was gross.
Yeah.
That was real gross.
Yeah. I like the goddess, and I like the comparisons too. It's that typical out in the waters when you're a pirate, their goddess is very wrathful and maybe vengeful is the wrong word, but causes wrath and causes chaos and so forth. Not like the gods they follow, that they're more shocked by this goddess Rin, of who is this sea goddess that you all follow that seems to actually be real.
Yeah.
That's very cool. And then I like the background we get as well with Drake's mother or brother, his past of his mother being a witch, I believe it was, or somebody in his past being a witch.
Witch-like, I'm saying she has magic, but there's probably something more. And she taught him how to speak to the goddess and speak to these magical creatures. Yeah, no, like he radiates main character energy. He's got all the perks. He's got the magical mother. He's got the prophecy foretold. 100%. He's got the brother in the back pocket of just like, yeah, no, everything is lined.
Literally,
everything's coming up, Drake. Really,
yes.
So
awesome.
No, all the world building around him is definitely the most interesting.
Yes.
Through his, and by extension through him as well, Beck, and the relationship of the gods and how that works. So I really enjoyed that. It made a world that felt lived in, as well as the history of Drake.
Yep.
So at first, like, it's more told to you that Drake is this notorious pirate. He's the most well-known pirate. And so that's just told to you. And that's something. But I do like we get more questions, and like Drake is confronted with things that we the audience are left for questions with. So it was more showing us, oh, there actually is a big backstory to Drake that we don't know yet. So that was good.
Yes. And I like the little bit of history nuggets we get with, apparently there's this Captain Black who existed before this novel that I believe the other novels go into, but we don't know as just reading this book. There's this past captain that everyone's just in the shadows of now. Nobody's like that old Captain Black. And now we're left with, we have this Tanner Black and others. So I like how we get this idea of who he was. And also what I like is because the scenes we get with Drake of the mysticism surrounded about what's the stories being told, like, hey, there's a sea goddess there, but also the story that the person's going to go off and tell about Drake, who knows what fluff and what zeal is put onto it. In the same way, the stories they're saying about Captain Black before, what kind of emphasis do they put on the story? How much are little lies? Does your loyalty lie with the tell itself deception? And is your persona and the perception of you greater than the actual man himself? Yeah. Because, hey, Drake, for all this persona he had, was right at the whims of Tanner Black.
Yeah.
But like nothing. And so that was very cool. There's a very small thing. I like how Keeb, he talked about this little story about, we didn't talk about his character, but the reason he doesn't commit suicide, he had that conversation with...
Oh, yeah, that's another little added thing. Just doesn't want to become a wraith and become a servant to the ghost ship.
Yeah.
Which I like when that came into the story of, if it was more in the early beginning, you would be with Keelan of, oh, this guy's just crazy.
Yeah, he's loony.
But then you go through most of the book like, yeah, he's probably not wrong.
No.
He actually is an immortal that, or at least hard for him to die. So
absolutely.
And the ghost ship's probably real too. So,
So I like that a lot. And the biggest thing this one did for me was it nailed the atmosphere and tone of the pirating. So beyond it just being grimdark genre, I was very immersed in the atmosphere I loved in this book. So very cool world building nuggets and stuff. But what really got me is, okay, I'm in pirate land. I feel like he has me wearing a pirate hook when I'm reading this book, which is very cool. So great vibes overall. Anything else for world building?
Don't think so. Let's go on to prose.
What everybody waits. The most exciting part of these reviews.
Yes.
There's a reason they're last. It's because we saved the best for last, right? Prose. What'd you give out of 5 stars?
Above average, 3.25.
I give it a 4. Great.
Yeah.
This is technically my lowest, but still great.
Yeah. No, it's above average. It's not.
No.
If the reason why I wouldn't say fully good is more to do with character voices, I felt a lot of bleed through. The only one that I felt distinct, that's what I mainly meant by like the difference between Keelan and Drake. I know as characters they are very different. I misspoke. It really meant like character voice between them was so similar of just, oh, Keelan's just he sounds like a worse version of Drake, but not anything substantially different. And so that kind of bled together. Descriptions were fine. I wasn't confused where I was at. All that stuff worked out well. The action was fine, but competently done, but didn't blow me away. So, above average for me.
Fair. What I liked most about the prose here was, I think it was expertly done cadence.
Okay.
I love the cadence of this where he had a very specific style that when he was as soon as I was reading the first couple chapters, his style is so clear of how he would describe things. I have a little example here I'll read, but he had such a unique style that he'd use a lot of commas and basically have first subject of I'll just read this off and then we can talk about it because it's a good example of something. But this is during a fight scene with Drake and Princess, etc. It's literally not a standout scene. It's just a random example. So I pulled it up because for some reason it was on page 102. Okay. So of the ebook at least. With Princess beside him, Drake rushed forwards and darted a quick jab at the soldier to get his attention. Princess capitalized on this distraction by sticking his own sword into the soldier's groin before both captain and first mate leapt backwards to meet the next wave of soldiers coming aboard. For a brief moment, Drake considered rushing forwards to cut away the grappling hooks that were pulling the ships together. Soldiers coming across a few at a time, they could deal with. But if the gap were close enough to leap across, they would soon be overwhelmed by superior numbers. Unfortunately, his moment of procrastination made his decision for him as two more soldiers swung across to protect the grapples. The first died of a gunshot wound, Beck's work, but the second quickly unhooked a shield from his back and stood guard. So it's very easy to read, first off, but he has this, I think the last sentence is why it stuck out to me, of like the first died of a gunshot wound, Beck's work, but the second quickly unhooked a shield from his back and stood guard. For some reason, a lot of these sentences are longer, but he does a lot of juts in there, like a whole, say, first statement, middle statement, last statement that'll connect to either the middle statement's either talking about the first part or the last part. And I got so used to that style, and he would always do funny lines with them, or like it would make him able to write very witty things about, you know, Keelan's point of view or whoever it was. He'd be able to throw in a fun way of saying something that could otherwise be dry and boring. It's that kind of thing with a very different than Terry Pratchett prose, but you know when you read a sentence from Pratchett and the end of the sentence changes your perspective of it?
Yeah.
It was a lot of that here where by the, you know, you're reading the sentence, by the end of the sentence, it was like, that's a fun way to rearrange that rather than, mm-hmm. that could be told a million different boring ways. He had a very fun style, and this being I think great for me, I noticed, probably inspired by Abercrombie, I'd assume.
I would say far more, yeah. The style of prose is, yep. far more similar to Abercrombie than Pratchett, but I get what you mean with Pratchett, like being the end of the phrase, mm-hmm. makes you feel differently from the beginning. I get that point.
No, this is definitely Abercrombie-esque, 100%. Yes. And I think he does a great job, not at, like, at imitating it, but just showing, like, being inspired by Abercrombie. Whereas Abercrombie prose, I think, is amazing, spectacular. This is a great job at, mm-hmm. doing a style similar, but its own. And it was fun read overall for how it was styled. Yeah. Anything else you got?
No, I'm really glad that you liked it a lot more than me. I definitely understand why people really like this book. I would definitely recommend this to several different people, like our buddy Justin. I'm recommending this.
I already did recommend it.
Yeah.
I finished it and said you should read this.
He's going to really like it. Yeah. I'm positive he will. Mm. So, yeah, I am not super against the book. It just didn't work as well for me.
Yeah.
But I know it's well done and a lot of people will like it.
Definitely. And two more things. One, remember to check out our sponsor, Display. Thank you, Display, for sponsoring this episode. And two, we are talking about at the end, any rating changes? Did anything change throughout the series, throughout the conversation, up, down, any categories? Because I think your overall sounds like that's where you're probably going to be.
Yeah, I mean, if I were to change anything, it maybe world building would go up a little bit higher. I think I'm going to stay where I am, but if I were to be convinced on anything, it'd be world building going up a little higher than good.
Fair.
Yeah. Because I'm thinking, thinking back on it, of just comparing it to a bunch of different books out there, the world building does carry a lot of the enjoyment of this book for me. And so that has to count for something, maybe a bit more.
Yeah, that's fair. If anything, so I'm not going to change it because I think NA is better than a 3. But, you know, we talked, the theme did come up a couple times of loyalties and stuff, but it's just so not a focus.
Here's the problem.
Yeah. How do you rate that?
It's not a theme when it's literally just the question of where loyalties lie. Like,
that's it. It's what in the book about title.
That? What is it saying about that?
Nothing, really.
Nothing. It's just constantly, where do their loyalties lie?
Hey, here.
There's nothing deeper than that question of, like, that's it.
So I'm going to keep it NA. I don't think it's not the point of the book.
And it's not, no.
It's not. So how can we be like, oh, how bad is it for not making me change my life's perspective on loyalty?
No.
It's not. It's not going with that. But okay, yeah, I'm happy where things are at too. So overall, this one is our fourth of the six books we read. My personal rated, it's up there in my, it's higher than four for me, but that's our combined.
Yeah.
Our combined. What we got.
For you, and just now that we're at the tail end.
Well, we got only six. We still have four.
No,
more.
No, no. Tail end of the video.
Oh, I thought you meant of our.
No.
Yeah, yeah. Yes.
Your overall, has any of the SPFBO books gone up or down in your mind? As they've matured, have metastasized in your brain? Have anything changed?
Kaigen's still the goat.
Kaigen's
definitely
the goat.
I mean, that's not going to change. By Blood, by Salt. Same, because I thought it was great. I still think it's great. I think over time, if anything, I look back at that. The thing that's metastasized is I want to read book two more. But my thoughts on book one are the same. I had a great time, and I'm excited for book two.
Yeah, my opinion of that book just keeps rising as the further I get away from it. I just really want to read book two.
Yeah,
and yeah, the more the special part is the dialogue of that. Of that novel blew me away.
Yes.
I really need more. But
that dialogue was phenomenal. Yeah. And Orconomics, I think, stayed about maybe
I've looked at about it a little bit more positively than I was on the review. And I really liked it on the review. So
yeah. It stands out. I guess I don't know what this means. I like the book, but I'm not ready to read book two immediately.
Sure.
It's one of those that I think it works really well. As a standalone, did a fun thing. That, and then the ones that I didn't like, I also was so recent. We just recorded Small Miracles. That has not had time to metastasize.
It,
so
it has not had time to change.
No.
I still liked it, but yeah.
I still didn't like it. And Spindle Manor, I'm very secure in my Spindle Manor thing of where I could see the fun. I see the fun. To me, it wasn't executed well for me. I see why other people love it, but I...
That book definitely gave me an example. Like, I would really like to recommend you a really good mystery novel.
I would love it.
Because we haven't done, when's the last, good mystery novel you've read?
We don't do a lot of mysteries on here.
That's the thing. So,
you do something like that.
I really want to get you to read Sweetness at the Bottom of the Pie.
That I also heard, what's the Hugo winner that apparently that's always being recommended on the book club? It's been pitched to us. It starts with a T, I believe.
Tainted Cup.
Tainted Cup. I heard, isn't that a fantasy mystery?
I believe so. It's a fantasy mystery novel. So that maybe could be that one.
Sweet. But for you, it seems like the book so far, Bible by Saul, it's gone up for you. Other ones have stayed about the same.
Yeah, roughly. Okay. Maybe Orconomics goes a little bit up for me. But.
And I finished Where Loyalties Lie yesterday, as did you, right? Mm-hmm. So it hasn't had time to sulk, but we'll see over time.
We'll see. Maybe my opinion will rise as time goes on. And who knows?
Yeah, I do know, too. Like, is it entertaining stuff? Is it just short-lived? Oh, it's so entertaining and fun to read now. How does it sit a month from now? Maybe it'll be like, oh, so fun. Oh, so fun. But I think I'm being this excited I am for book two. I really great. Enjoyed it a lot. This was our review of Where Loyalties Lie. Any concluding words, Rich?
Thank you for watching. Catch us next time.
Bye-bye.